welcome to the Mystery Twins Detective Agency. I'm Liam S. Smith, and I see a podcast in your future.
I'm Regan Lloyd, and I'm never going to take a stand for anything ever again in case it disappoints me.
Ooh, Jesus. This week's episode hit you hard, I see.
I just love a mystery envelope and hate when that's taken away from me.
And it was taken away from us in, like, the harshest fashion yet this week.
I agree, yeah. It was just,
And yet I still have one.
Well, me too, but it ends with "I'm so mad" written in red pen.
All right. So how are you, Regan, before we get into that?
Yeah, good. I had a very chill day yesterday. I don't know if we talked about resolutions, but I've watched one movie and finished one book, so I'm on track for 52 new things of each.
Right, I see.
I watched The Shawshank Redemption, which I feel like came up in our POIs a while ago.
Maybe. I have seen it, so it seems like something I referenced. Something about putting a pin up of a lady up to make a tunnel.
Yeah, that's basically exactly the plot.
Yeah.
I didn't recognise anyone in it, though, and I didn't want to go through everyone's IMDb pages to see if anyone in the cast had been in a show that we had watched.
What's his name? Freeman in that?
Yeah, he is. He's like the narrator / deuteragonist.
Right.
No?
Yeah.
Is that the second protagonist or the second antagonist?
You got that right. That was right.
Okay. Good. Yes, well, that's what he is. also, it makes prison look a lot harder than Orange Is the New Black does.
Yes, I can imagine. But how does it make it look compared to Oz?
I've never seen Oz.
Me neither. How does it make it look compared to The Wizard of Oz?
Oh, I mean, The Wizard of Oz is like a sparkly prison, so I don't know.
Which is really, when you think about it, is really a more insidious kind of prison because it makes you not want to leave.
Oh my God, good point.
Those poor munchkins
and
flying monkeys.
There is a lot of stuff in The Shawshank Redemption about becoming institutionalized to prison and not wanting to leave.
Oh, like that old man.
So that's, oh, yeah. Anyway.
Shawshanksters out there know what we're talking about.
Lloyd coming in with a hot tank.
A hot tank of nog.
What have you been doing?
Nothing interesting.
Oh, neither have I, but I still talked about it for 3 minutes.
No, I must have been working lately and doing my podcast stuff.
Well, yeah, that is boring.
Today we watched the second/third episode of Monk, depending on how you slice it, because the first episode was a two-parter.
I think in this instance, it's the second episode.
Yeah, but everything I saw online listed it as season 1, episode 3, so...
Me too, which was weird. Like, did they stretch out the pilot over 2 weeks? That seems dumb.
I guess on reruns they would probably run the pilot as separate.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Nights. And possibly could have been separate on the DVD release.
We'll never know.
There's literally no way to find out. Really, this sort of Monk episode division is one of life's great mysteries. Some things that man wasn't meant to know.
Straight up.
Monks of the religious sort will spend decades pondering this.
I think they're going to come to the same conclusion as us, though. Because I think we're right.
Why bother? So the episode is called Mr. Monk and the Psychic, in which Mr. Monk meets a psychic. Or does he?
He does.
Tune in to find out. Well.
Well, you're right, actually. Or does he was the correct. Yeah, so if you recall last week, Liam did not want to keep watching Monk. I was about to call it Psych. That's a different show.
Also, I should also clarify that this isn't a crossover with the show Medium.
What?
The show Medium? This is not a crossover with it.
Oh, okay. I thought you said it was, and I was like, oh, I did not.
No, but that's a show that has murder mysteries in it that we should consider.
Put on the list.
Put it on the list. Sorry, I don't know what that was.
Never apologise.
You were saying, though, sorry. Last week, things.
Oh, yeah, you didn't want to keep watching Monk, but I said we had to because you made me watch 3 episodes of Death in Paradise.
Well, look who's talking to.
I know, honestly. I'm just very disappointed in myself. I picked a bad horse to use up one of my favours on.
Are you disappointed in Tony Shalhoub?
No, I'm not disappointed in Tony Shalhoub.
No, I think he did a very good job in this episode, actually.
I agree. He's a very good actor.
I was stirred by his performance in a couple of scenes.
Yeah, but just the writing, nah.
Well, I mean, as we'll get to, I think the biggest sin with the writing just occurs in the first, like, minute of footage, and if it weren't for that, it could have been a much more passable episode.
Yeah, I agree. So maybe if you want to watch... No, don't. I was going to say if you want to watch this, maybe you should just skip the first 2 minutes. I'm sorry, Junior Detective,
this is important. So we were just talking about watching Medium, and I've just got a message from Regan here saying, what the fuck did we just say we would put on the list?
Medium, there we go. yeah, we have a Twitter combo, that's the list.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I quite enjoyed that. Yes, Mr. Monk and the Psychic. Should we go over our people of interest?
Oh, yes, let's.
Okay. As always, we have Tony Shalhoub as Adrian Monk, the detective who has developed a wide variety of anxiety-driven psychological maladies as a result of his wife's unsolved murder.
Yep.
And his offsider, Bitty Schramm, is Sharona Fleming, his live-in nurse, I guess?
I don't think she's live-in, because we see her at her house in episode one.
Oh, that's true. Just his full-time assisted living nurse. She touches things for him that he doesn't want to touch. She, I don't know, gets the attention of people
cooks
when he doesn't want to
yell.
Chicken
pot pie on Tuesdays. Yep.
Certainly, of course. He makes fun of him a lot. He's more comfortable touching her than he is with other people, which is important, I think.
Yeah, well, I guess that's the sort of relationship you would develop.
And I think that's probably, you know, having that source of human contact is probably an important aspect of his recovery.
That's true.
I said without knowing any of the sort of ways that you rehabilitate this sort of stuff.
No, absolutely not. But, I mean, human touch is important, so...
Rounding out the regular cast is Ted Levine as Captain Leland Stottlemyre, the sort of no-nonsense, by-the-book police captain who, there's a pattern forming with his character here, where for the most of the episode he doesn't have time for Monk's shit, but then when Monk has sort of figured it out, he's always got his back.
He needs to become a better friend.
I really like this guy, though. He's a really good actor, I think, for the show.
For the show, or is he a good actor?
Well, like, I mean to say that, like, other than this, he doesn't have the most sort of extensive career from what I've seen, but I've been routinely very impressed by him in this show.
Yeah. Another thing that I don't think I actually mentioned last week, I was really impressed with the guy who was guilty, with his acting when he's being accused. He had, like, a really good... His, like, I've been caught, but I'm pretending that I don't know what's happening.
Yeah.
Subtleties were very good. Yeah, I was just like, damn, son, you were a good actor.
For this week's episodic cast, we have Commissioner Harry Ashcombe, played by a man called John Bourgeois, which is an amazing
name. Do you reckon that's just his stage name?
It must be.
No one can exist in the world with that surname.
Unless his family was the namesake of the bourgeoisie, because they were just so hoity-toity.
So fancy. Do you reckon that's why they gave him this role?
Just because he had sort of the gravitas for it? Because
he had a bougie name.
Mm.
And it's a bougie character.
It is very. Like, it seems to, like, his bougie scale seemed to increase every time he reappeared in the episode.
Yeah, he just.
John also played Henry in Ginger Snaps, which I haven't seen, but I understand is a werewolf movie.
Ooh. Is it about a ginger person
possibly
becoming a werewolf?
With lesbian overtones. I think it's about a woman called Ginger becoming a werewolf.
Oh, that also tracks.
Yep. Kate Trotter plays his wife, Kate Ashcombe. She played credits that I'm not familiar with, but were significant on IMDb. Becky in Upside Down and Mrs. Borford in Beyond Borders.
Don't you mean
Kate
Beyond
is in
Borford? That was really bad. I'm sorry.
I certainly don't. Don't you mean Beyond Bourgeois?
Yes. That was a better joke that I should have made.
Kate is in the first minute of this episode-ish.
Yeah, all she does is some hysterical crying, basically.
Linda Cash plays Dolly Flint, a fraudulent psychic.
Whoa, spoilers.
She played... We'll get there. Look... You don't think Monk is a show where psychic powers... What if it was a show where psychic powers existed?
That would be a very interesting show.
Monk would become obsessed with learning telekinesis so that he wouldn't have to touch things.
Oh my god, yeah.
But he still wouldn't be able to solve the murder of his wife, no matter how good his aura seeing or whatever
gets. Do you reckon he does?
He must. They wouldn't just end the show without it, right?
Has it ended? I assume so.
Yeah. Yeah, there must be some meta plot episodes in there where it's like, we've got a lead on Tracy Monk's murder.
Surely.
And then Captain Leland Stottlemyre would be like, Monk, you're too close to this. I don't want you working on this case. And Monk would be like, I'm going to work this case anyway. Someone open this door for me because I can't touch it.
Hire this man immediately for all of your writing needs.
For the gritty Monk reboot.
It's not really gritty. We're just picking what's going to happen later.
It will be.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I did not realise you were just pitching yourself specifically for the gritty Monk reboot.
There's going to be a bit where the murderer is wearing a Ronald Reagan mask and he's climbing a fence, and Monk really wants to arrest him, but he can't because he don't want to climb that fence because it's filthy. So he pulls out his very well sanitized revolver and shoots it into the air, screaming.
Perfect.
Lucille Gould played... Linda Cash played Lucille Gould in Cinderella Man and Mrs. Alan Pearl in Waiting for Guffman.
That is a movie I've heard of.
Yep, I've heard of both of them, not seen them.
No, I'll put them on my list.
All right. You might be putting some bad stuff in there. Have you seen The Breakfast Club?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Is that Jenny one of her Cooper, credits, or are you just asking out of interest?
No, I just wanted to make sure you'd seen it.
Oh, yes. Yes, no, I have.
Have you seen Ferris Bueller's Day Off?
Absolutely. I think we discussed that like last week, or the week before.
Maybe. We're talking about so many things.
I know. We're just so chatty.
Jenny Cooper plays Jennifer Zeppatelli, who is an ex-mistress of Harry Ashcombe, the police commissioner. She played Valerie Harris in 24 and Bethany Tanner in Grey's Anatomy.
Good for her.
Yep. Now, weird thing.
Go on.
The two women that police commissioner Harry Ashcombe is involved with in this episode, the actresses both have the same first names as their characters.
Yeah, that is weird.
That's a weird... coincidence? Question mark?
Oh, do we need to delve deeper into this conspiracy theory?
What are they hiding from us? Why are they giving roles to people with the same first name as them?
Ridiculous. That happens to Patrick a lot, because they cast him and then they just write the scripts and call all the characters Patrick. And he really hates it.
Because it all looks the same on his CV, I would imagine.
Yeah. And also just, like, I think he doesn't want people to think
this is Regan's actor boyfriend, for those of you who may not know.
I think he doesn't want people to think that that is actually him rather than him playing a character.
Right, right.
Particularly when he is paired with I use the term celebrities loosely, who are playing themselves.
Oh, like, say, Danny Green.
Yes, like, say, Danny Green.
Popular ads for a certain homeware chain that shall remain nameless unless they give us money.
Exactly. Should we just jump into the episode?
We should. We open in a stormy night, or at least a dark night, as a woman called Kate is on a phone with a man named Harry. She's driving, she's in a rush, she's panicking. Their dog's been hit by a car, his legs have been broken. Or have they? Because we see... in the back of the car or something, with the man, the dog is there and it's fine.
I do not remember seeing the dog, and that is normally something I would just have paused on.
I saw the dog. And while he's on the phone, this Harry man is setting up what looks to be some sort of ramp in the middle of the road.
I did not realise anything, like, particularly untoward was going on. I was trying to figure out whether he was actually talking about a dog, because I thought maybe he was putting, like... instead of ramps, I thought maybe they were things to stop their pet horse from being hit by another car.
I thought they were talking about a horse for a while too.
I don't know why. Why did we think that?
The things that he were moving looked vaguely to me like something you might put in front of a horse trailer to help a horse get into it.
Yeah, that's not. Yeah, okay, good. Well, I'm glad that we both came to the same conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
Much but like no, Lydia Spring actually... and the being a dog.
We're actually watching a murder happen right now, which is ruining our game for the rest of the episode.
Absolutely. I was
most of the reason we're so bitter about this.
I was incensed.
And I was smoking incense.
Oh.
Yeah.
I was watching Cars last night while I was cooking dinner because it was on TV.
Sure.
And
starring Lightning McQueen as
Owen
Larry
Wilson.
The Cable Guy.
Yes. And they're talking about headlights.
Headlights or headlice?
Headlights, because they're cars, so they don't have hair. Right.
Unless they have sort of hair upholstery on their seats.
Ah, possibly. But no, they're talking about headlights, and I think Lightning McQueen must not have them. because he says, no, but the racetrack's all lit up, so you don't need them. And then the truck says, so is my cousin, but he still has headlights.
What? What does that mean?
Like, that his cousin's constantly lit.
Right.
I thought that was a weird joke to put in a kids' movie.
Can cars get drunk?
Well, I think the truck is like a redneck character, so I think that's the joke.
I guess if you give them, like, premium.
I don't know. Anyway, I digress.
Anyway, Harry keeps telling Kate to go faster and get here sooner, so she's speeding and she comes around the corner and she drives over this ramp and her car flies off a cliff and she dies.
Jaunty opening credits!
So we realise that we know the name of the murderer and we see his face clearly, and then the credits start and it's really... just really soured my mood for the rest of the episode.
Me also. Particularly because I campaigned for this and it just let me down immediately.
It's okay, I forgive you.
I'm so glad.
The credits are largely reconstructed from the montage of him getting ready for the therapist last week, except there's a few other things added in, like Monk vacuuming and, I don't know, making sure the umbrella hooks on his umbrellas by the door are all the same way around.
Just your classic Monk stuff.
Classic monking around. Should have said monking business.
Yeah, classic monkey business.
Regan, he's not an animal.
It's Monk hyphen Y, excuse me.
You know, that's like... name my something. I got nothing.
Yeah, anyway, this is not a deep well that we're tapping.
Meanwhile, Monk is at a press conference and he's not being allowed in, and Sharona is yelling at the guy, being like, this is Adrian Monk, you need to let him in, because he's the only good detective in this city.
She's not yelling. She's being... very polite about it.
She's being assertive.
Yes. But then the guy is like, oh, I'm so sorry, I didn't realise, and lets them in. So, good.
On this note, where do you think this show falls in the spectrum of... how do I put this? You know how in shows like this where you have a brilliant detective, it's a writing challenge to make it so that they actually seem brilliant and everyone else doesn't just seem stupid?
Oh, right, okay, yeah.
Where do you think this show falls on that?
I mean, we don't see a lot of other people doing any investigative work, really.
No, true.
So I think...
and I think our main point of contact for it is the captain, and at least in the last episode, he doesn't really do as much in this episode. He's more concerned with sort of the obvious solutions to things.
I think it was improved a bit by last week, the captain having that sort of existential crisis where he's like, but we see the same things, how does he figure it out?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. They sort of lent into it being like, why am I not as good as Monk?
Yeah, I think without that, it would have just seemed a bit... yeah, like
who hired these people?
Yeah, like, why can't any of you figure this out? But the fact that they're addressing it makes it less shitty.
Yeah. Which isn't to say I think that they are, like, especially incompetent TV cops.
No, definitely seem worse TV cops.
Mm-hmm. So, this is the press conference regarding the man Harry, who we now learn is a, I think he was retired, police commissioner, and his wife, who has died or has gone missing, as the case may be at the moment.
Yes.
Monk offers his services to solving this missing persons case, strongly implying he already thinks it's a murder, but Harry tries to sort of diffuse that at the moment.
Also
Monk keeps brushing his lapel.
Also, Monk is getting quite emotional watching Harry give his press bit. What's it called?
What? Conference?
Is there a
press
word?
Conference.
No. I know, like, the thing is a press conference, but, like, is there a
speech?
Term for the... yeah, for the speech, like, for the...
I'll just go with speech, honestly.
Press releasey type thing that he's giving. Obviously, because he also...
Statement?
Statement! Yes!
Yes, because he... is also a cop with a dead wife.
Yeah, and...
which is probably informs why he jumped to murder so quickly.
Yeah, I agree. And the police commissioner, very insensitively, is like, can you even imagine how this man feels? And Monk's like, yeah, actually, yeah, I
Wait,
can.
Who was like that?
You know, our buddy.
Oh, the captain.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yes.
Yeah, yeah, that was certainly a moment.
Like, it seems weird that he would say that, like, he's forgotten, because that is the whole reason Monk can't work at the moment, because he's got this, like, PTSD-driven anxiety from his wife dying.
Yeah.
They all know that. It's not a secret.
What if it was?
This would be a very different show.
Do you think... What if the captain killed her?
I don't think he's malicious enough.
Okay, but what if he was?
That would be a very interesting twist.
Do you think they would have the gall to make it a recurring character?
Nah, I don't think the show would go any further than this sort of thing where there's a member of their own who did the murder.
Counter question. Why does Sharona Fleming leave after like 37 episodes?
That was literally about to be my next question.
I'll look into this if we decide we're going to stop watching it.
Yeah, I think I'll probably keep watching it as like a background show for when I just want something on.
I won't, but okay.
Because there are like a billion hours of it.
That's true. And it'll likely be something we won't be planning for the podcast.
Exactly.
Meanwhile, a woman wakes up in her car at the bottom of a cliff. She's like, what's going on? Where am I? And she looks around. And then nearby she finds Kate's body in a car, like under a mudslide.
Whoa!
What? Turns out this woman is notorious fraudulent psychic Dolly...
Flint.
Someone or other. Flint. I say fraudulent because she's been arrested by the captain 3 times on fraud charges over the past 20 years.
Yeah, but, I mean, the aura of Kate must have led her to there.
Because she woke up in her car and had no idea was she there. She must have entered some sort of trance and slept drove there. It's the only logical explanation.
Because she woke up in a car, traced away the fog so I could see the Mississippi on her knees. Bam, bam, I've never been so lost. This is my jam, 15-year-old me's jam.
I have no idea what this is.
Yeah, I know. I'm hoping one person is like, yes.
You're not going to tell me?
It's called I Woke Up in a Car by Something Corporate, who is a like pop, punky, piano-driven band from the early 2000s. A.K.A. my jam.
That's a deep cut.
It is a deep cut. I didn't think, if I'd thought about it, I would have been like, no, don't do this. But I didn't. You're welcome.
Good. Monk is up on the top of the road, like, scooching around and walking all over, crouching because something was dragged there. He basically uses this to later deduce that ramp thing happened that we saw. So let's put that to bed.
Well, they seem to be moving through this murder at a quick clip.
Oh, and also at the end of this whole thing, he's like, look, the car must have gone off there, but that tree's unbroken. Ergo, something's up here.
You got it, Monk. Something is up.
So they're all talking to this Dolly woman who found the car. Monk vehemently doesn't believe in psychics because he is sort of, you know, intensely rational apart from his delusions and stuff.
Is it actually? It's just OCD, not just OCD.
Well, I say delusions in the sense that like he needs to touch all the fence posts, or presumably he gets worried something bad will happen.
Okay, I see.
Sharona, on the other hand, is super into psychics.
Like, that's the only way she found out that her ex-boyfriend was still seeing someone else?
Yeah, it was the best $35 she ever spent.
That's pretty cheap for a psychic, as far as I can tell.
Mm. And for someone who has a bad working relationship with her, the captain is also strangely open to this woman being a legitimate psychic as well, citing, like... there have been documented cases where psychics have found bodies and missing persons, and Monk is like, that's just statistical inevitability.
Yeah, which I agree with. Just remember that episode of Bob's Burgers where Linda thinks she's a psychic?
I don't. Tell me more.
I mean, that's basically the crux of the episode, and I'm pretty sure she solves something. It's a good episode. I'd recommend it.
I would recommend most episodes of that show.
Most, if not all.
Hmm. Every show has a couple of stinkers.
None immediately spring to mind, but I trust you.
Maybe a couple of the early Gene-centric episodes.
Right. Anyway, Monk. So, as...
Harry's there. He IDs the body.
Like, insists on IDing the body, even though the captain sort of tells him he shouldn't.
But really, he should, because you need to ID the body.
Yeah, but I think the point was, like, they could ID the body because they all knew her anyway.
Oh, right, because he was their best man, the captain was.
Yeah. So he knew what she looked like.
Yep.
But as Dolly Flint drives away, Monk notices that she had to adjust her car driver's seat.
Moving it forwards,
indicating that someone taller than her had driven the car there. Was
he
it Harry? Yeah, I think so.
He notices this whilst freaking out that this tiniest speck of mud was flicked onto his pants by her driving away. So if he's this good a detective when he's obsessing over these minor details, imagine what he was like in his prime.
That must be the reason that they keep him around, right?
Well, they don't. He's off the case. Off the force.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, good point. But they keep asking him to...
Well, the police haven't asked him at all in these two episodes. First time it was the mayor, and this time it was, I guess, under the pretense of remaining to seem innocent, the culprit.
Yeah, you make a valid point.
They go to the captain's office, and he's like, the inquest is over, she was a bad driver, it was an accident, she's dead, move on. But Monk is like, I'm not going to move on, I'm Monk.
Classic Monk.
There was even a photograph of Dolly driving to the place where she found the body in her magic trance, because she ran a red light on the way there, and there's a clear photo of her driving. You can see her hair over the her distinctive curly hair over the sides of her car seat in a rear photo.
So yeah, that puts that one to bed.
Yep, case closed. That's airtight. That is. It's certainly not a wig.
Absolutely not.
So they go to Awake, and Monk starts getting really suspicious about
everything, basically.
About Harry and his marriage and his mistresses.
Yes, so he does some snooping.
Well, what happens is, when they are talking there, Monk is at first, I think, sincerely there to be condoling, and he gives Harry the book that he sort of turned to when his wife died, and sort of really emphasises how much it meant to him. And then Harry shakes his hand with both of his hands and really holds it for a long time. So Monk has to go and wash his hands afterwards because he's freaking out.
But while he's going to wash his hands, he gets distracted by a bedroom.
Wait, he goes upstairs and there are all these boxes of the dead wife's stuff just everywhere.
Now that arouses suspicion in Monk, as it does with me, having watched a lot of shows where people have died.
This isn't what it ends up being, but I had assumed that she was going to be moving out and they were going to get a divorce, hence murder.
Oh, no, I picked it up for the same way that Monk did, which is that when he is confronted by the captain, he's like, oh, yeah, I started packing away her things because, you know, I couldn't bear to look at them, which I'm sure you appreciate because your wife's died. And Monk was like, no, I haven't touched any of Trudy's things. Because that's the thing, people always leave the rooms intact.
Yeah.
That's a thing.
What was I going to say? At some point in this scene, someone says a line like, this house was a gift from her father. So that was, although it didn't end up being as influential in the actual case as I thought, it ended up being very influential in the writing of my mystery envelope.
Ah, yes, because that's how we established that she had money.
Yes, and then later in the next scene, it's explicitly said that she has a lot of money.
By his mistress.
What? Jennifer Zappelli. Not Zappelli, that's the name of the family from JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. Zappatelli.
So how we find out that he has a mistress is Monk is rifling through some mail as well. And sees
as you do,
a returned package
lake.
And smells it, recognises it as being expensive ladies' perfume, and then is like, well, she's an ex-girlfriend who doesn't want anything to do with him. And Sharona's like, how did you know? And he's like, have you ever underlined anything 6 times? And then we zoom in on the package, which says declined with 6 underlines. So
that's very emphatic writing.
She does not want his gifts.
So, yeah, we cut to them interviewing her. There's this really weird bit where she's sitting there silently and Monk is like, you're thinking about how you wasted the 5 best years of your life, huh? Because she was staring at these empty bottles of Beaujolais. Is that how you pronounce it?
I think so.
Which were each dated for the last 5 years on her mantelpiece. And also she was feeling her ring finger, which I assume that's not a wedding ring, right?
Well, no, I think that's the thing. She was, like, absentmindedly had her thumb on that finger, but there was no ring on it.
Right, okay. So, yes, Jennifer talks about...
I feel like there was a lot
about...
of filler bullshit in this episode.
Yeah. But what isn't filler bullshit is Jennifer talks about how she ended their affair because he was never going to leave his wife because even though they hated each other, he couldn't live without her money.
Ooh, intrigue.
And then she says, this would all be significant stuff if we hadn't already seen the murder happen at the start of the episode. She says, it wasn't my fault, he's crazy. And the monk says, the accident? You don't think it's... We spend at least the first half of this episode watching Monk sort of very slowly come to the same conclusion that we were given at the start of the episode when we saw the murder happen. It always seems very pointless to me.
Yeah, I agree. Like, it just...
We know how... We know who did it and how they did it.
Yeah, so all we need to figure out is the motivation and how they're going to get them, but...
And also, I guess we don't know why Dolly the psychic is involved, but that doesn't really seem that important.
No, it's... Yeah. It was a disappointing second outing, I think.
Rather.
Yeah, so we've got that. We don't see Jennifer again.
Until the climax.
Yeah. So now we go to the psychic's house. I feel like we can really gloss over this scene because the majority of it is just her giving a reading to Sharona. But
not even a reading. She's doing phrenology on her, which, for those of you who may not know, is a super quaint but also super racist pseudoscience.
Yeah, where basically it's saying like the size of your head determines your intelligence. And
specifically the size of the bumps on the different parts of your skull.
Yeah, and the...
If I had a big bump on this part of my head that I'm touching, it might mean that... The corresponding part of my brain is enlarged for the trait of, like, sinisterness.
Yeah, which they used to distinguish between ethnic groups.
Yeah. I was really disappointed when I found out that it was used for that purpose a lot, because prior to learning that, it is such a dumb, quaint pseudoscience that I, you know, thought was really funny.
Yeah, I learned about it when we were studying Heart of Darkness, so that was immediately hey, listen,
I mostly just picked it up from pop culture references, I think.
Yeah.
Which don't really delve into that sort of
subtext
so much.
We had a very good teacher who was like, don't think this is cool.
Phrenologize people.
Yeah. Also, I think it's probably explicitly racist in the book. I remember that being a super racist book.
Okay. Like, endorsing it or just exploring it?
I don't think it's condemning it from memory.
Okay, right.
Because it's written in ye oldie times.
Well, sure, but so is To Kill a Mockingbird.
I don't know. I can't remember. I hated it so much. I've erased as much from my memory as possible, except that I learnt the word I think it's synecdoche. You're right. There's that movie with Philip Seymour Hoffman called Synecdoche.
Synecdoche in New York.
Yes.
I saw that word on TV with regard to that movie at some point in the last 24 hours.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I learned that word and I really enjoyed it.
What does it mean?
Oh, God, okay. It is when you use one specific part as a symbol for a whole, I think.
Okay.
So I think like Heart of Darkness is like you're using a heart to symbolize the body of that.
Symbolize darkness.
Let me fucking do a goog. Anyway, I was obsessed with the word and I made sure every essay I wrote on Heart of Darkness for the entire year had that in it. And my teacher was like, I really hate you.
It's not a word that looks like how it sounds, is it?
Well, no, because I thought it was called synecdoche because that's how it's spelt. And then the following year, that was when Synecdoche New York came out and it had the pronunciation on the posters. And I was like, whoa. Huh. Yeah, a figure of speech in which a part is made to represent the whole or vice versa, as in England lost by 6 wickets, England meaning the English cricket team.
Right. Huh.
It's from Greek and it means simultaneous understanding.
Cool.
I'm so glad you learned something instead of me, because normally it's just me being like, what? New fact.
While the phrenology is happening, Monk disturbs it by clattering some glass while he's looking through the kitchen and finding sleep medication. So
Dolly gets really mad and makes him sit down and watch the reading happen.
Yeah, so it's a tarot reading now.
We're covering all of the psychic bases.
If you want to learn more about the tarot, start listening to my podcast, JoJo's World, from the week after next, where it becomes a big thing in the TV show, and I'll be researching it.
Oh, interesting.
She flips over the chariot, and also the Knight of Pentacles.
Basically, she's just telling Sharona that she'll meet a hot English dude whose name starts with D. And Monk's getting really mad.
She's gonna get the D.
Wants to. Monk wants to talk about the case, but Sharona does not, because Sharona wants to know about the D that she's going to be getting.
Yep. So long story short, Dolly took her sleeping pills because she has insomnia, went to sleep at 3:30 a.m. after watching Law and Order, and then
important
next
thing she
knew,
point
she woke
that
up.
I'm glad that they clarified for us.
Yeah. Cross-promotion, maybe? Same networks? I don't know.
Possibly.
Probably. I feel like the network wouldn't take kindly to them mentioning another show.
No, that's a good point.
And then next thing she knew, she woke up on that beach or whatever it was. I got beach from it. It may have just been cliff base.
Yeah, I think it was cliff base. I don't think it was beach.
It looked very beachy.
It did, though. You're right.
Monk keeps, like, asking detective questions, so then Sharona licks his hand, and he freaks out, and she makes him go to the car to get the wet wipes to clean him off.
Which turns out to be a blessing in disguise.
Yeah, which turns out to be one of the most important investigative pieces of this case.
Because
he drops his wet wipe.
And while he's crouching down to pick it up, he notices a bit of gravel that's darker than the rest of the driveway, I think?
Yeah, a small black piece of gravel. It's like Fateful Findings.
So he pockets that, and then they end up... Oh, and then he goes to Harry's house in the dead of night, pockets a bit of his gravel.
No, not his gravel. A gravel sample from his car tyre.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Takes it.
And then we cut to the hardware store, where we learn that this is gravel from a company called Decorative Gravel, which is an amazing name.
Does what it says on the tin, doesn't it?
Yep, yep. You know, it's right in the yellow pages where you look for it in 2002.
Exactly.
It's a very unpopular colour called Volcanic Tuff. The guy in the hardware store apparently spoke to the company, and they've only done like 1 to 2 houses in the area with that colour. So at some point, that would imply that the car, hang on, let me get this straight. The tyre was in Harry's car. So his car must have been at Dolly's house at some point.
Yes. And if the hardware store guy says it,
it's got to be true.
Pretty conclusive. And, then,
and then there's a whole bit where they briefly lose the pebble.
But it turns out it's in Monk's hair, so fucking great. Thank you for wasting 2 minutes of my time with that.
Thank you for making Sharona get into the dumpster and look for it.
So now we're basically into the accusation parlour.
Kind of. First they go and bother Harry as he's giving away their dog.
Oh yeah, because it was her dog, not his dog, and he doesn't want it.
Yeah. And it tells us he hates dogs because we needed more reasons to know that in script writing terms he was a bad person.
Also, I think that feeds into the whole thing about him like just getting rid of all the memories of his wife, which you wouldn't do.
Yeah. So at this point, Monk shows him all of the evidence and basically tells him everything.
Which seems like a rookie mistake to do with a police person, but all right, Monk.
I thought it was going to be like that bit in Phoenix Wright where they tell Manfred von Karma that they know everything that he did and then he tases them and takes all the evidence.
I would have actually been happier if that happened.
Because also he was holding the two baggies with the two samples of gravelin right in front of him, like with really loose hands, the whole scene. I thought he was just going to take them and get in his car and drive away.
But no, he's just like, you can't prove anything, and then leaves.
He's like, you're in my way. And then Monk is like, I know.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yep. So then they go down to the beach, and then the captain comes and sees them. He's like, guys, are you hassling the commish? What, are you idiots? What are you doing?
Also, Sharona, your son left a message for you, and here's a bit of back and forth that's going to waste another 30 seconds of this godforsaken episode.
Also, we skipped a bit where they go and hassle Dolly at, like, a TV studio or something, and she admits that she's a fraud.
Oh yeah, that's important, I guess.
Yeah, and also that she was telling the truth that she has no other memories of the night. So she thinks maybe she was a late bloomer in psychic terms.
Which is funny, but not true.
No. So the captain's there. They're like, Captain, help us do this thing. And he's like, yeah, all right, let's go set up a really elaborate farce to get this guy to confess.
Yes. Now, like, this was a redeeming quality of this episode because we do, at the Mystery Twins Detective Agency, love a fucking elaborate accusation.
Yes. So, Harry comes home, and Leland's in there. He got unrestricted access to the house for his team from Harry's lawyer, and they're doing a seance with Dolly, with Monk, with Sharona, with that lieutenant who's always kissing Leland's butt.
Yeah.
There's a good bit where they're doing the seance circle and then you complete the ring and Monk doesn't want to grab anyone's hands, so he sort of touches their hands with his elbows.
Good bits, good bits.
Good bits. They're on the trail of a woman, 32 years old, Jenny, or Jennifer Zeppitelli, Harry's mistress.
Of course, they don't spell that out to Harry. They just say the name and he's like, Jenny? And they're like, yeah.
Yeah, and they're like, Dolly found that corpse the other day, so like we've got to investigate all our cases now.
Yeah, so, and she can feel her spirit here. So basically they've just set up an elaborate crime scene.
Yeah, this has got to be like entrapment or something. This can't hold up in terms of evidence law.
No, surely not. Like, so they've planted a shoe and some blood and some more blood.
And some human hair.
And then they go outside and Jennifer's just lying in a shallow grave that he hasn't even bothered to cover her body with.
With a head wound.
Yeah, so Dolly goes on about how she...
He grabbed the poker, straddled her, and just pounded and pounded and pounded her.
I mean, maybe that's what she's into.
If that's not innuendo, I don't know what is.
Exactly. But no, she meant it in the brutal, murdery way, not the sex way.
And Dolly says, she's telling me at least I can be with Abigail, my unborn baby, who you forced her to abort last summer.
And then he's like, whoa, how did you know that?
And then everyone's like, she's a real psychic. So that means you did it. And he's like, no, I didn't. And they're like, yes, you did. And he's like, I didn't do anything. Hey, hang on. Oh, yeah, she found your wife's body. She's a real psychic. No, she didn't. Yeah, she did. I was there. She didn't find anything. I just drove her there. What? I just confessed to driving that psychic to find my wife's body? What's going on there?
Yeah, and then we get it all spelled out again, just in case you hadn't put it together.
Have we entirely spelled it out, like the mudslide and everything? We probably should.
We haven't, but they have.
Yeah, so what happened was, after his wife drove off his doom ramp, a mudslide happened, and her body was lost, they couldn't find the car, and he wanted to collect this crazy high insurance policy that she had on her life, but he couldn't until they found the body, and he couldn't just be like, hey, dig over there, I reckon my wife's body is there because I killed her.
So that's how he drugged the psychic, knowing that she took sleeping pills because he read her case file from all her other petty crimes.
Yep.
Probably chloroformed her, put on a wig, drove through some red lights to make sure there was evidence that she was alone in the car, took her down there. Oh, yeah, because how Monk figures this out is that when he's back with Sharona the second time, when there's the stupid back and forth about her son calling and everything.
Oh, yeah.
And, Monk is like, hey, why didn't you use the service route, police chief, commissioner,
the
captain?
Service route down to the Knot Beach where they found the car and the body.
And he's like, I don't know, I can't find it. And they're like, yeah, funny, neither could we. But somehow
but Dolly
found it.
In her ghost trance.
Even though she was sleep driving and has never been here before.
It's almost like this had been meticulously planned or something by the man we saw commit the murder at the start of the episode.
And it has, indeed. Case
what
closed.
What a twist.
Then we get some bullshit at the end where
they arrest
meets
him. We have the debrief that all these shows have. They talk about like skepticism and stuff. Monk says, they're all fakes. You've got to be a little skeptical or you'll believe in everything. UFOs, elves, income tax rebates.
That was funny. I don't really understand it, but I was like, nah, I think that sounds real.
Then Sharona meets a British man with a dog. His name's Daniel with a D.
Know what I'm saying?
Yeah. They're immediately attracted to each other.
He asks if her and Monk are together and she laughs hysterically and Monk's like, it's not that funny.
Yeah.
End.
Also before that, he asks Monk, why are you touching all those poles? Is that an American thing? And he says, yes, I'm touching all the poles because I'm proud to be an American.
Now, that's the sort of dry humour I could use more of in this TV show.
I quite liked his response there. Tony Shalhoub did a good job this episode, I think.
He did. He's a good actor. Good job.
I think he had a lot to work with script-wise, but I think he was doing as good a job as you could expect.
Yeah, exactly.
Which brings us to Mystery Envelope segment. The segment in which we reveal the guesses we made during the episode to see if we could outfox the detectives in solving the murder that was already solved for us. So I guess in this episode, we were just trying to figure out why and or how regarding the psychic.
Yeah, so give me yours.
Okay, I wrote this at 1746, which is the first time we saw Jennifer the Mistress face on screen. I've got two points here. First, killed her because divorce would give her the house / money and he hated her. Second, psychic colluded, brackets affair, or drugged red light deliberate wig.
A plus detective work.
Yeah. Feel like I did a good job in that one. It was a pretty low ball, but I was pretty accurate.
And also, that was, 17 minutes into a 40-minute episode.
Yeah. But as you said earlier, they do a lot of sort of faffing around in this episode.
Yeah. Mine, I didn't write down the time thing, but it was
significantly
later in the episode. I think it was 34 minutes.
Do you remember roughly what was happening?
Nah.
All right.
But I do remember checking the timestamp at like 34 minutes and being like, oh, I should probably make a guess now because they're about to get into solving it if last week's episode is anything to go by.
Right.
You don't know
that there wasn't going to be a 20-minute gun chase.
I mean, I didn't, but I'm glad that I stopped and did my thing now. But I said, she takes sleeping pills, he drove her.
Yep. Good job. We did it. We solved the case.
I'm not even pleased that I solved it.
This wasn't really a challenge, was it?
No.
Well, onwards and upwards. What about next week?
Well, we're not doing any more fucking monk episodes.
Honestly, I did enjoy, other than the disappointing mystery aspect, in just a purely television sense, I enjoyed this week's episode more than last week's.
Yeah. I'm so mad that this was my first stand. And it betrayed me.
Man, I hate it when your stand betrays you.
I know, you're trying to read your music and it's just like bloop and falls over. Tough times.
All right, so are we pretty resolved on this being a cold case then?
Absolutely.
Okay, I guess that brings us to the next segment of our show, Mystery of the Week. Week.
Yes, do we have one?
I have a sort of a micro mystery. Cultural mystery, if you will, akin to our Banksy mystery.
Okay, perfect.
This is the title of a Vice article, and it's a good title for the mystery, so I'll just read that. That S thing that everyone drew in school, what is it?
Oh!
You know that pointy S that sort of bends
exactly
back in on itself?
Thing you mean.
This is an article.
Was it? I bet it was you. I was going to say, I saw a thing on, I assume, Tumblr. That was all the lines for the S thing, and it was like, if you don't know what this is, you're not a true 90s kid, and then someone had drawn the lines around it like it was...
Loss.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty good. That was me.
Yeah, because you're the only person I know who reblogs literally everything about Loss.
It's funny because it was such a bad comic.
No, yeah, I know. If you haven't seen it, then it's a thing that you should investigate.
Yep, in your own time.
Purely for how bad it is.
This is a comic, an article by Julian Morgans of Vice, who did a sort of investigation into that S that everyone draws. So he managed to source, then debunk three potential solutions to what it is. It's not the
Great.
Superman S. It's not the Stussy logo.
Uh-huh.
It's not the Suzuki logo.
Uh-huh.
And it's not the Saxon logo, whatever that is.
Okay.
He spoke to a professor in language and media at Middlesex University in London. And that professor, Paul, no surname, unless. Yep, no surname.
I mean, if we know what you study and where you work, Paul, we can probably find it. You're not really anonymous.
We can find you, Paul, and we can make you pay. No, I'm kidding. The reason that kids go through this is probably because it's a Mobius strip. It can't be drawn continuously, but it does have a perpetual flow.
What?
And that's all they offer in way of explanation.
That's bullshit.
Well, do you have a better idea? Can you solve this mystery of the week, Regan?
I mean, it's a good point that you brought up about it not being the Superman S, because that's how I've always referred to it in my brain, even though I know it's not.
Right. I always thought it was a skate brand logo or something.
Yeah, I just assumed it was a cool thing that I couldn't... do. I learned how to do it, but...
Well, okay, so let's put our tinfoil Deer Stalker hats on and solve this mystery with a good old-fashioned conspiracy.
Perfect. Because I feel like it's the same as, like, learning how to draw a cube, right? Like, it's just a thing that you, like, look
yeah.
at and you're like, how?
Well, how is children doing it all independently across the world in middle school because of the mind-controlling fluoride in children's toothpaste.
Normally I would get behind this, but so many people think that fluoride is actually bad for you that I feel like I need to be the voice of reason.
You can't endorse it?
I can't endorse this conspiracy theory.
Okay. Sure. All right. Mystery unsolved. Mystery. The search goes on for the source of that S that kids draw in middle school.
Oh, what about a time travel conspiracy, though?
I'm listening.
And that's why it's all over the world. Because...
Go on.
A bunch of people who were all in somewhere like New York, who'd all come from different places in the world, all travelled back in time, but ended up split up because of some time travel anomaly, where because they were together in the future, they were all going back to their own individual pasts, and that was their team logo.
And they were becoming children again?
Yeah.
All right, so they were all travelling back into their own personal timelines.
Yes.
It's like, I'm going to draw this, so have you ever drawn... And then it became mimetic.
A what?
It became mimetic.
What's that?
Like a meme?
Okay, yeah.
People saw other people doing it. It's like, I'm going to do that too.
Yeah, and then that was, and then they could never find each other again because that was meant to be their secret symbol, but then everyone started doing it.
That's what they call the tragedy of the commons.
Exactly.
No, it's not.
I don't know what that is, but it's
that's
a good...
a politics thing, I think. I can't remember off
the top of my head. It's a good name for the movie that we're writing right now about this. And then yeah, because then on the posters.
Well, this is gonna be a subplot in the Monk reboot.
Yeah, no, but the tragedy of the commons. Like, imagine the poster, because the S in commons is this S. That's how we get people in with the nostalgia value, because they're gonna be like, right. Oh yeah, that S thing.
I just googled it, and for what it's worth, the tragedy of the commons is an economic theory of a situation where individual users acting independently according to their own self-interest behave contrary to the common good of all users by depleting that resource through their collective action.
Yeah, we can tie that in. We can tie that in.
We can twist that.
Yeah, easy done.
Twist that like the Mobius strip that forms the S.
Hoy! Yes. All right. Well, I feel like we've done some good work today. You know who didn't do some good work? The writers of Monk.
Yeah. But you know who did? The actors of Monk.
Absolutely. And we'll be back next week, hopefully with a better thing.
With something with an actual mystery.
You never know. You can never tell, honestly.
It's surprisingly hard to tell, honestly.
Unless we get an impartial third party to read a plot synopsis of every episode before we decide to watch it to make sure it's a solve-along mystery. But... I don't want to pull anyone into that.
No.
I don't hate anyone that much. Cool. All right. Well, our theme music is In the Crowd by The Years. And if you would like to get in touch with us, maybe suggest something that you know is indeed a episodic solvable mystery, hit us up on Twitter at mtdapod or email mtdapod@gmail.com.
And on the subject of Twitter, check it out on a regular basis for Mystery Envelope Mondays, in which we post our mystery envelopes for public perusal and encourage you, if you want to watch the show, to do your own.
Yes, so I will start telling you in advance what we're watching, if it's not immediately clear from the end of the previous episode, like if we're, you know, going on to the second.
And I guess also in cases like this, what exactly we're trying to guess.
Oh, that's a good point, yeah. So now you can judge us. I'm trying to start colour-coding mine so that I do all of my initial notes in one colour and then my second linking thoughts in one colour and my third conclusions in another colour, but I haven't done that as yet. But they are pretty because I've got some coloured markers and I love them.
I mostly take notes in a Word document as I'm watching because I take a lot of notes and I type faster than I write, so I just write my conclusion on my envelope.
Well, we still got to get you a bigger... notebook so you can do a better conclusion.
Yeah, let's just say it moved me to a bigger notebook. See you next week, guys.
Okay, goodbye.
Someone's gonna get that joke and they're gonna hate it.
No yachts.
At Tussle always wins. And I don't know what to do with these tossed salads and scrambled eggs.
They're calling again. Bum, bum, bum. What does he yell at the end? Frederick Green! Why am I still recording?